This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This ain't no disco. Ain't no country club neither. This is RVA.
Welcome back, everybody,
to another exciting episode of
Hola La
in RVA.
Episode 17 of season 3.
That's right. Oh my God.
With your big daddy.
With big daddy here.
And this is going to be a Christmassy episode.
It is a fun episode.
Yeah, we got lots of events we're going to talk about. I'm going to have some Christmas tree trivia.
We're going to talk about some new pop-up bars. There's a ton this year.
But most importantly, we're going to talk with our esteemed guest, Juan Condi.
Wow, I really, really like that. I need to just, Big Daddy, can I just keep a clip of that to play in my car sometimes?
Anything you need.
Okay. Great to be here with you guys.
We're so glad you could make it.
Super excited.
I just jumped in. I knew you have other stuff. I'll be quiet.
No. I think we're ready. Let's tell us a little bit about Juan for those of us who don't know.
Well, today we are sitting down with someone who is truly part of the fabric of Richmond. You know his voice, you've seen his face, and whether you grew up here or you are a new Richmonder, chances are Juan Condi has helped tell stories that shaped your view of the city. Born on the steppes of Mongolia in 1939. Just kidding.
So we calculated that as 86 years old, I
You're
believe.
Looking pretty damn good at 86.
You must have been a youthful beginning.
If you read further, I got a reboot in 65.
Yeah. So
just
there was some weed smoking in college, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, well, it's going to be legal and there's going to be rec next year here in Virginia. So yeah, I can say that.
Okay, all jokes aside, Juan started his career in radio back in the 80s and 90s, eventually becoming one of Richmond's top morning voices. He's covered major moments, everyday community stories, and everything in between, always with heart, clarity, and a deep respect for the people who call this place home. And now, after teasing us on Facebook with a very mysterious guess who's going back on the radio post, he's entering a brand new chapter. We get to talk about all of it. His journey, the evolution of local journalism, rally, RVA's stories, the behind-the-scenes chaos, and of course, what this big radio comeback is going to look like. We are so excited to welcome longtime Richmond journalist, broadcaster, and community voice, Juan Condi.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes.
So nice to be here. That really is the most gracious intro I've had.
Yeah, well, we try so around nice. Here.
You guys are succeeding.
We're top notch.
Yeah. So let's get to know
sure.
each other a little bit better. And since we're doing a little holiday theme, I think we should go around and talk about maybe our favorite one or two Richmond, like, go-to traditions that you have to do every year around the holidays, be it go to a pop-up, go to a light show, go to a restaurant, whatever, or even something with your family. So, Juan, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm a Ginter Park guy. I got to go to Ginter Park. It's the most, I don't know where they put all the lights that they put up every year out there and what warehouse holds them for the, you know, 50 weeks that they're not in use.
Right.
But that's always a really kind of warm thing for me. Mm-hmm. And it's, you can take your family there or not. And you can drink or not.
Right.
So it's it really is very nice. So that's something I try to do every year. But that's like the most consistent thing, I think, holiday-wise.
Like
yeah.
I'd
How about you guys?
For us, we love to torture ourselves. So for the past few years, since it started happening, the Jasper, their pop-up, the Miracle on Cary, we torture ourselves by getting there and standing in line for hours.
I would say it's not beneficial to mention that because there's just going to be more people in line that hear that.
Or maybe I'll deter them and we'll go on a less crowded night. But no, seriously, it's worth the wait. Even it's the frostbite.
Yeah, they have
what's a little amputation if you get a delicious cocktail at the end of that?
Yes. And remember what the Scandinavians say. There's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing.
That's right.
That's true.
So bring your hand warmers, peeps, and line on up.
Yeah, that's
tradition.
Yeah.
I always enjoy drunk shopping at Quirk Hotel with Liz.
Ooh, yes, that's fun as well.
Every year. That's a staple in this friendship.
Yep. Create a new tradition for myself on that one.
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Do you take a room there when you drunk shop or just bust in through the lobby?
We usually start out with a brunch.
Yes.
And we'll walk on
It's
over
a progressive feast. And then Common House has been joining in on the last 2 years.
And they do
a
wine
tasting. You can kind of just go... Wild.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, and then you're like, wait. Holiday spirits.
Yeah. You're like, wait, what did I buy when you get home? And it's even
it's a
more
surprise.
Fun. Maddie, Big
All right,
Daddy.
So I haven't done this in a while, but there's always the Tacky Light tours.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And so I wanted to mention, I got drunk so much one year that I stepped out of the limo and I threw up on a reindeer.
Oh, Matt.
Party foul.
No.
Santa brought you a lump of coal.
There are some incredible displays. There's some really great displays up on your block in the neighborhood here.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Really elaborate. Somebody took over a whole corner on Marshall. I was like, wow, that's something else.
I love that place. Our neighbors actually... Two doors down.
Ricky and Amanda.
Yep. They won for Halloween, and they are cutthroat about Christmas. They have been trying. They've been upping their game. So when you leave, you'll have to look. But
I did. I looked on the way in. I was
nice. They're amazing.
Their decorations are so good.
And without the 8-foot inflatable, Yukon Cornelius.
Oh, yeah.
It's like an organic display. It's not terribly, super commercial.
I know. I think they have their own storage facility just for decorations because they have so much Halloween and Christmas.
There is right.
It's
and
insane.
Then you fix the shorts the mice ate through all year when you try to put the stuff back up. Yeah.
So you should not complain about just having to go up to the attic, huh?
Yeah.
Oh no, wow. You need to go. Big Daddy, come to my house. Battery candles, one in every window.
Okay.
And that's it.
Aww.
Little tree inside.
Hey, yeah.
I don't have any children anymore.
I'm on board with that,
Don't give him any ideas.
I like to say it's understated. It's really just lazy.
Minimalist.
Right.
Yeah.
It's minimalist.
It's very in. Okay.
All right, let's get into the meat and potatoes.
Mm.
So Juan, are you from Richmond originally?
No, I am originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, okay, so that was a lie.
We should explain to the listeners that these guys, very graciously asked me for a bio so that this conversation might be led in directions that are positive and fulfilling for my career. And I sent them like this whole satirical story of my life, which is hopefully funny.
Which I loved.
Yeah, which began with being born in 1939 in the Mongolian steppes and then...
Right, exactly,
where birds mocked... birds crapped on me and the skies mocked me.
I think we'll be saving that for dramatic reading, for Christmas Eve.
I read
we
it to my mom.
Oh my God, I love
know.
That.
She laughed a little bit, so. Brooklyn, and then my folks got divorced when I was like 7. And my mom moved to Washington, D.C., and my I have four siblings. So my brother and I, my next brother and I moved at that point. And I kind of played hopscotch between New York and D.C., Virginia, Maryland until seventh grade. When I realized that New York was going to be very, very difficult in junior high school for a kid who weighed 12 pounds.
Yes.
And you know, was getting beat up on corners, as I mentioned in the satirical thing. That's sort of true. Grandmothers didn't bet on me losing, but they did gather to watch me get my ass kicked. So it was kind of frightening. That's part of the, you know, New York's a tough place. It was back then. So I came down here, lived in Arlington, like 7th through 9th grade, and then Alexandria, 10th through 12th. So Alexandria is really kind of my home. I came to Richmond after I quit college because my brother was going to VCU. And I took some classes at VCU and got a job at a restaurant. And I got a radio job from a guy who came to visit the restaurant, who came to eat at the restaurant at 6th Street Marketplace, which is defunct. It didn't have any funk back then either, but it's defunct now.
I could drink underage there. It was cool.
Did you, really? Were you back in the
okay. At the Friday Cheers or
very
whatever
nice.
It was there,
right.
Remember?
The,
yeah, they only did
Festival Park.
Markers.
I love you guys. Then I got a radio job. And after that, I kind of never really looked back. I managed to parlay the radio job into some commercial work.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal, game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Because I took acting classes at, you know, community college and got a little resume and then got cast in some stuff. I did good work for Circuit City and the national campaign and some other things. Post office, U.S. Army. And I was going to leave radio. I started in like 1989. So I was going to leave radio in 99 because I was 33 and it really felt like it was a young man's job. I spent 10 years in nightclubs and I'm kind of like, okay, what are you really going to do with yourself, buddy? So I went to real estate school and was going to sell houses and I was about to be take my state licensing exam and Channel 8 came to me and they were like, hey, do you want to anchor news? Thought to myself, this is a really, 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 really bad idea, guys. You don't know what you're getting into. I don't know very much about news. And I think that my appeal to them was really just that I had a built-in audience. But I took it extremely seriously. And I'm a reasonably smart guy. So you can learn how to be a journalist and learn the nuts and bolts of it. The rest of it is whether or not you're a good communicator, whether you can write well and work under pressure, tough deadlines, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I really, here's my calculus though, at the time, I'm going to go sell houses, right? They want me to do this. What's going to happen is I'm going to sign a 3-year contract. They're going to fire me and pay me out, which is cool. But I will have done nothing in the end, but put my face on television, which will make me a more attractive
real estate
agent mm-hmm. because my face on the sign, oh, it's a new TV.
Yeah.
I'm not going to work with him, man. He's garbage. So my calculus was I could only be more recognized by doing it, and 3 years turned into 22.
Yeah,
so I never had to
that was,
sell.
That was a great idea. Yeah.
In the end, it was too good a deal to pass up. I also learned something, and I try to tell people this now. I learned the power of no in the first negotiation because they offered me a number that was about what I was making at the time, mm-hmm. and we're at the secret meeting out in Powhatan because no one was supposed to know that I was going to be doing television. And they said the number, and I was like, no. And I took a lawyer with me because I didn't know what he was doing. And he kind of snapped his head. And I was like, no, I'm not going to, no. But it was great because I said no, and then they jacked the number.
That's awesome.
So sometimes saying no is a good place to be. It lets people know that that you have options and pride and a sense of value about yourself. Don't worry, I lost it right after that. But in that moment, I was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, they probably thought, oh, shit. Channel 12 and Channel 6 are coming after you.
No, I don't think so. Well, each of the three stations at that time had a very different sort of character.
Okay.
You know, 12 has always been the bull in the china shop, the real, you know, heavy number one. 6 has had its day here and there and still does good work, but 6 is really like the city station.
Right.
People think of 6 as like the urban, rich. They're on Broad Street, for God's sakes. 12, despite its modest location on Midlothian Turnpike. Yeah, I know, right? After 9/11, they built a fence. Right, the fenced it all in. You know, they're really connected with more affluent folks in the suburbs, and Channel 8 is really the kind of Petersburg, Southside, rurally sort of station in the sort of public mind, opinion.
I'm learning a lot. I'm not from the area.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm from upstate New York.
Oh, really? You know what's funny? Where?
Well, I guess it's more southern,
okay,
technically, but Elmira, Binghamton area.
Interesting. I have never, for living in New York City, most people, and I used to go to Bear Mountain sometimes for fun, but that's not very far outside of New York.
Mm-mm.
But I work in Albany for PBS sometimes.
Oh, cool.
So I know Albany, Troy, Rensselaer. It's a really cool area, a wonderful place of the country that I had no exposure to at all. Beautiful up there.
Yes, it is.
And the New York Thruway, by the way, has the best rest stops I've ever been to. I actually don't know anything about that. It's a toll road, but they have this amazing, beautiful, clean, you know, space age looking places where you can get gas and pee. So
all of the northern rest areas are
really
better than the south. Sorry, guys. But yeah, the line Buc-ee's. At Buc-ee's. The line. I got to go places, people.
Yes. Yeah. Buc-ee's is a phenomenon.
Always. It is.
All right, a little bit off track there, but that's how I got to Richmond, and that's how I got my jobs.
So when you first got into that atmosphere, first day, first few months, what was the atmosphere like? Was it kind of like you had to show them that you had the chutzpah, like your other anchors or whatever? Like you had to prove yourself because you didn't really have, you had the radio experience, but not like, wow, he just jumped the shark. He's, you know, he's now
why
the anchor.
Why is this guy here?
Yeah.
I knew that that was going to be the attitude. Or that was going to be the environment. I didn't belong there. I'd had absolutely no experience as a television. I take it back. I used to work for Channel 8 doing weekend weather for a while. And then I did like a little segment called The Buzz, which was kind of an 11 p.m. entertainment report. But I didn't have the credibility or the credentials to be an anchor. Because usually you come up through the ranks before they let you sit on the desk. Yeah. So I was very much keep my mouth shut, my eyes open, accept criticism openly, and try to, you know, to just... do the job as well as I could. And, you know, time kind of helped me out a little bit. They brought consultants in, so they would tell me about the way that I read or things that I could do, you know, body-wise, because it's a very stylized presentation, being a news anchor, especially less so now. But, you know, the 80s was kind of the end of the... Hi, good evening. Here now the news, and I'm your news anchor.
Oh my God,
Ron Burgundy.
Totally. But I grew up watching guys like that in New York. You know, Roger Grimsby literally would come on at 6 and 11. Great guy. He used to be a newspaper guy, and was like, "I'm Roger Grimsby. Here now the news." A double entendre, that's Roger. Good. What's coming next?
I love that.
Awesome guy. You know, so I had a sense of what I needed to do, and that helped me, I think. And then there's always going to be people who don't believe you in you or, but that's why there are other stations. You can watch somebody else. You don't have to watch me. But I try to be good at it.
All right. So my next question is, Richmond has changed so much over the years.
Yeah.
From your perspective, what's the biggest shift that you've seen in the stories Richmond is telling?
Olivia, my career in radio and television has been marked by consolidation. Industry consolidation. The radio station I worked for was owned by a family. I think they owned one or two other stations, maybe. When I went to Channel 8, it was owned by an insurance company, and they had like three or four. It was nationwide insurance. So back then, having a TV station was like a jewel in the crown. There were also ownership restrictions, so you couldn't have a gajillion stations. So by the time I got to Channel 8, RIC, they had like four or five stations. By the time I left, they owned the people who had bought us, and we'd been sold three or four times through my tenure. They own 200. So all the things that you read about in your econ classes and business classes about consolidation happened. You have depressed wages, economies of scale, homogenization, across markets. So a little less focus on local. Like when I first started at WRIC, they had a dedicated political reporter. Because we're a state capital and someone needs that beat, mm-hmm. man. It's right. a beat. Mm-hmm. So the coverage was a little bit more in depth, certainly. And so the climate was different. And that's what I think is missing a little bit, where it's easy to, if you're on TV and there's a fire, fire beats all, man. Fire will take away the best story you have all day because it's pictures of flames and yeah. water. And if it's yeah. wintertime, there's ice coming off the building, right? So it's difficult to, it's difficult if you're a programmer to look beyond the things that are flashy and easy and get to the meat. The meat is more expensive to get and it's harder to present well and keep people engaged. So that's the change, I think. For me, there's less depth and courage and individualism. Most of your news is really, you know, like the, I'm trying to think, like our raccoon, right?
Who, oh my couple, gosh,
have
yes.
you guys seen
yes,
this? The Ashland
yes,
raccoon? So a raccoon busted into an ABC store in Ashland, got loaded and passed out in the bathroom after breaking bottles of booze. That story was everywhere across the country because it was a cool story. The chance that that would have made so many outlets years ago was very much less likely. And that's also due to the concurrent rise of the internet. So the internet's rising. Consolidation in corporations is increasing, and that affects your product. So that's how to answer that, I think.
And I guess people just have such political, like,
oh yeah,
like sickness. Like, I'm over it.
Yeah. Well,
like,
most people,
fatigue, political fatigue.
Most people
are,
at this point are like, I know what yeah. I like, and I know what I believe, and I don't want to watch or listen to anything that's outside
yeah, exactly.
of my own sort of bubble. And everybody has a little bubble, you know. Even people who pretend not to have a bubble, they're in a bubble. It's just a transparent or bubble.
Yeah, people think have low attention
spans. I think the
news
is so sensational now, just about everything.
Historically, it's difficult to say because, okay, I am a total nerd. You guys messed up inviting me here. If you remember like yellow journalism and remember the Maine and the Spanish-American War, I mean, there have yep. always been tabloid newspapers that were sensational and many of them operating in the city at this.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Same time in cities and towns at right. the same time. So there's always been an element of sensationalism, I think, in American journalism. Mm-hmm. The difference is that before the internet, you had the big three. You had ABC, CBS, NBC. So there was sort of an accepted, America was much more willing to have a single baseline of
like
what
a hierarchy
we,
of like
this yeah, hierarchy, right, but also a single baseline. Like this is the stuff that we all agree on, okay? Now that's kind of out the window. There is very much less a baseline, and you're allowed mm-hmm. to be, and maybe properly so, much more polarized. But in a way, you lose something because you lose a sense of community in your countrymen, right? It's really difficult because America's a huge place. Living in Boise is not the same as being here. Here's mm-hmm. not the same as San Francisco. The fact that we exist as Americans at all is really a wonder if you think about it. But the idea that we're becoming fragmented means that it makes it harder to decide on what the essential elements of Americanism are and properly should be. So, we're in a very interesting time. But that's reflected by the media that you have and the way people consume media.
This is a deep episode.
Hey, wait a minute. Where are the drinks, man?
This is one of our deeper episodes.
I know, it's terrible. Nobody's going to watch this.
Let's get even deeper.
All right, let's.
You've covered some of the most defining events of the last 20 plus years. 9/11, I-95 sniper shooting.
COVID.
Hurricane Isabel, Gaston. Virginia Tech massacre.
Yeah, they sent me to the Pulse shootings in Orlando.
Ooh, oh, wow. Yeah, God, I remember that. That's we moved into our condo that day.
Yeah, it was real tragic. So horrible. Yeah, I've been had the chance to do some big stories.
Wow. Is there one or maybe two particular stories that you feel like changed you or shaped you the most as a journalist as you were going through
great
it?
Great question.
Oh, it's an excellent question. It's going to reveal that I'm pretty hard-boiled. And maybe that's coming from New York a little bit and, you know, how I grew up. I'm not a very sentimental person. And that's good in a way. And in a way, it's not. I think the biggest story of my news career had to be 9/11. Mm-hmm. Hands down.
Yeah. Hands down.
Just because so many things changed. And for folks who are younger, right, if you're under 25 years old or really under 35 years old, you don't remember anything that's pre-9/11.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I'm not talking about smoking on airplanes. That used to happen also.
Yep.
But you didn't have to have security.
No TSA.
Daddy could walk me to the gate.
Exactly. O.J. Simpson could be late for a plane and run through an airport. Yeah. And nobody was, right, before he had his downfall. But so things were really very much different. You had a different sense of safety, what defense meant. Terrorism really became a thing. And there's a Department of Homeland Security. So a great deal changed after that. And since I'm from New York, I had family in New York for 9/11. So my brother could see the towers from where they lived. And my stepmom worked in the World Trade Center. So she was there for the bombing in 93.
Wow.
And then for 9/11, went to go vote in the primary that day. So she wasn't in the building.
Oh,
like,
thank God.
I caught in the collapse and the whole thing and was injured, had to walk miles. The crazy thing, though, is, and I went to New York in October to visit family after that, and being in that wreckage pile, which is kind of still steaming, and it smelled like burned electric wires or something else. I'm not sure what it was. That was heartbreaking and terrifying. But what was really terrifying, because I lived in Arlington and Alexandria, was if you go up to I-95 into DC, the Pentagon is on the left-hand side of the road if you're heading northbound, right? And above that on the hill is the Navy Annex. So the idea that someone flew a plane over the Navy Annex down the hill and into the Pentagon just blew my mind, because I was like, that's a nifty bit of flying. And there was still a hole in the outer ring, so you could see the burn marks. Just an incredibly difficult time and a moving experience. So I'd say 9/11, pretty handled easily.
Did that change the way you approach stories moving forward from a certain standpoint?
No, but it really gave me a very, very keen sense of pre and post, where institutions, people, attitudes, commitments changed in many ways now that we take for granted then. So, I think that it didn't really change, because I always try to be as forthcoming and honest as I could in my work, in that there's no such thing as unbiased news or unbiased writing. Every single thing. Mm. There's no such thing as unbiased speech, right?
Yeah.
It comes out of you.
Everybody's
biased. It reflects you. So the important thing for a journalist, or the way I understood it and practiced it, was that I am ultra aware always of my internal bias and measure my internal bias against what's happening and tamp my internal bias to be as objective and as down the middle as I can. I can't not have an opinion, but I'm darn sure going to try not to be sure that my own ideas are not impinging on what the story is.
I was just about to ask you've spent years building trust with Richmond. What do you think goes into maintaining credibility?
Oh, wow. That very sense, the idea that, you know, it's so passé, but like, there are some big things that should matter to us. There are things that matter to me as a citizen of the United States, in which I have insane pride. I'm insanely patriotic, I think. And the idea of who we are, what America means is important to me. And having a free press is one of the first things they mention in the Constitution. And that's for a reason. So I'm into that. I'm into all those sorts of ideas and debates.
Are you scared by, like, the potential censoring that's occurring, like, with the press passes and stuff?
Oh, okay, like, you know? Limiting the Capitol Press Corps and the Pentagon stuff? Yes and no, I think. I think on its face, it's probably something that we should be concerned about. And I also try to be hopeful because Americans are resilient. You know, most of us really don't care about things that happen that are outside of our lives because we're so busy trying to take care of our lives. Whether, you know, unless you really have an insane amount of money, most of us are trying to work and get by and get ahead and pay for some college or maybe leave something for our kids, right? At the same breath, Americans have an incredible track record of righting and refocusing our national sort of ethos when things go awry. I don't know how that's going to happen. You can't imagine it will happen forever because all empires fade and we have been an empire, right? So this may be it. I don't know. But I like to have hope that that somehow we'll find a new equilibrium where folks who live in San Francisco and Boise and Richmond can all be bound by something greater than their individual communities and express that to the world because America's a great place and we are great people, I think. As an American would say, America. Heck yeah.
America.
Heck yeah. That's right.
Reminds me of 9/11 because I feel like we all united for a minute.
Yes. Yeah. But in times of great tragedy that happens, you know, less so now because times of great tragedy are sometimes not viewed the same way or certainly treated the same way by folks who've traditionally been spokespersons for unity and calm and that sort of thing. Which is also weird because, I mean, I remember very distinctly after that time, George W. Bush saying, hey, don't forget to go shopping, which seems so, like, petty at the time. But the idea that, you know, don't stay home, continue to spend money and live your life like you should is an encouraging kind of thing in a way. Yeah. Also, that don't let this stop you. We're going to keep on going.
Just return to normal,
Or certainly, closer to what it was.
Yep.
So you recently teased that you're going back on the radio.
Yeah, and I'm really, really upset in the way that you guys are bringing it up. It's supposed to be a tease, here I am. I'm supposed to spill the beans for you on the pod.
Well, you can tease a little bit more.
Ooh,
la, la, la.
This is that kind of podcast.
What's the tea?
What's the tea? The tea is that I am going to, I'm doing a very, very, very small show on a limited run to see if I enjoy it, to see if I get some kind of response from folks. I love this format. I love talking. I love chatting. The chat thing is really in me, right? I also love the idea. Like, I really loved radio when I was a kid. I remember distinct, like, DJs I'd listen to when I was a kid. Like, oh, Uncle Johnny. Oh, my gosh. I was on the top 40 with Casey Kasem religiously.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's still on, too.
It's still on, yeah. With the AirSats running Seacrest. No, I like Seacrest too. Limited run, short, to see if I like it, to see if people respond. And then maybe I will, we'll see if it works out well. Who knows? I could podcast too. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But as you guys know, it's hard. Tell us?
It's hard. No, because that would give it away.
Okay. I had to ask.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
I'm a good journalist.
I'll give you enough. I'll give you this.
If you want to give it away.
It's not terrestrial.
Oh,
okay.
Not a terrestrial outlet.
Extra terrestrial?
It's extra. Well, in these days, terrestrial just means earthbound.
Katy Perry is in charge of it.
That's isn't she dating Justin Trudeau now?
She is.
She is.
Isn't
okay.
that insane?
I know.
Oh my God.
What's something people would be surprised to learn about behind the scenes process of local news? Something that the public never gets to see.
Ooh, yeah.
The deadlines and the idea and the flow of the work, that really it is very much it's a show. you're getting shows together. So every day there's a reset and a flow of how you kind of get all this 30 minutes together. And we should also mention, like, here's how it changed over the years, right? Like, when I started, we did a 6 o'clock and an 11 o'clock show, and they were excellent. And now news starts at 4 o'clock and goes as much long as it can into the early evening hours. Why? You tell me why.
Because people are watching at different times?
No, because it's much cheaper to produce news with people who've been there all day than it is to buy syndicated programming. So what they do is, and CNN kind of brought this up, right? You can run the same half hour over and over. So there's a lot of repeat in what you do. So I think what people don't know is how you walk in every day and you pitch these stories. You have some in the bank that you know you're going to do that day. And then literally people sit down and they pitch stories that they've been told about by somebody else or that they've enterprised themselves. People talk about it in a group. There are assignments. You go out, do the story, come back, write the story, edit the story, air the story, do an 11 o'clock version, and then do it again. I love the fact that it always renews, that every day is new.
That's speedy.
Yeah.
It's always new. So no matter what mistakes and horrible things you did yesterday, generally it's a new day. And it's not always, because people are sometimes bound by projects that last months and years. And, you know, you're struggling through this thing for 6 or 8 months and then there's something new. Every day, boom, it's like Groundhog Day, where you get a little magic wand and you get to try again.
Yeah.
And I love that part. And also the fact that it's a show, you know, I think that.
People would like to know how much of the writing and research does the actual anchor do, and like how much of a collaborative process is it?
Good question. It depends entirely on the team, on the ethos of the station, and the desire or lack of desire for the anchor. Some people are just presenters, and they will read Ron Burgundy-esque in the nth degree what you put in front of them.
Right.
That's it. I'm not really worried about anything except that it's clean. Thanks. I'm going to go. I had a really hard time with that, partly because I felt it took me about 9 years to feel comfortable in that job, like that kind of 10,000 hours thing. So it took me a long time to feel comfortable. But I always wanted stuff to be in my voice and not to be fake and to be very straightforward. I very much like that kind of Hemingway, no frills, here, not the news style. So, a lot of the jargon you hear, efforting, you know, the kind of catchy news words. I know what it is. They always, so-and-so telling CNN. Yeah, it's really weird to me. I don't talk like that. So I tried to always rewrite the stuff that needed to be rewritten and to write the best stuff that I could.
In your own voice.
Yeah, it was clear. That made sense to me. That I wouldn't be ashamed to listen to or have to answer. To have to answer for.
Yeah.
Because if you're the anchor, right? People know reporters, but they know the anchors. So when you walk out in the street, you really have, like I joked that they didn't pay me for the time I was on the air. It was to represent the station the other 23 hours of the day. So I wanted to be sure that I felt good about what I'd done when I walked out.
So if I saw you walking into our building with the dry cleaning, I could be like, excuse me, sir.
I would have stopped and talked to you for as long as you wanted,
really?
Because that's the job. And I think people sometimes would say hi to me just to see if I was going to be an ass. You know, Americans watch television their whole lives, but never really get to meet anybody who's on television, with the exception of local personalities,
that's
right?
True.
You're not going to meet, Magnum PI is not going to be walking in and out of the building generally. So it's important, you know, so it's like you get so much juice that's undeserved just for having the position.
Right.
And it was really important for me to realize when I left that you're a placeholder. Somebody does this before you. Somebody will do it after you. You're not that special. You might be good at what you do, but it's not, no one is irreplaceable.
It's like anything.
Right.
Yeah, man.
What could you say was your proudest moment looking back at your career?
Leaving?
Story-wise.
Story-wise.
Yes.
I think leaving was my proudest moment because it really, because I knew it, you know, they pay you a good amount of money. I live 8 minutes from the station. My life really was pretty easy. I had aside from special assignments, I had a pretty good deal and a lot of respect and some money. And to walk away, I think, was my biggest achievement because I realized that I didn't feel like I fit any longer. And that's hard. It took me, I should have left long before I did, but it took me a minute to get to there. Mm. The stories that I'm proudest of, it's hard to say. There's so many, and I'm a goldfish, man. Like, really, I wake up and I'm like, oh, it's a new day. What do you know? What happened yesterday? almost forgot all about it. You don't forget the feeling of it, but you forget the nuts and bolts. We did good work on the Pulse shootings because I went down there with one photographer. We didn't know jack about the city. We didn't know anything, and we had to make it work. Morning show and then evening show breaks. For a long time, it was exhausting. But I'm proud of that because I tried again to do my very best, and the conditions were difficult. Oh, I take it back. There's also something else. We did. Here's like your TV news station is not infallible. I'm giving away all the secrets now, right? In the first Obama inauguration, we were scheduled to go, but a big team. It was like 8 or 10 of us. We had different assignments. We were all going to go, but because of errors that sometimes happen, we didn't have access to any of the official events because they hadn't been cleared in time and stuff. So we really went up there and renegated our coverage of the first Obama inauguration, which I'm also really proud of because, again, like I know my way around D.C. pretty well, and I've had friends work at CNN, so I was familiar with where I was going, what I was doing. But we did a good job considering the fact that we didn't have the proper press passes that one might to do these stories that folks expected.
That's cool.
And it was insanely cold that day too. So we really did a good job.
Yeah.
I love that.
Sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
Go on, Big Daddy, jump in. I listened to this podcast and you were underrepresented, my friend.
Yeah, I believe I am.
Girls.
By far and large. Mm. So one of my questions is, what is your go-to weather app?
My go-to weather app. Interesting. I don't have a. I use my my Apple weather app. I guess I look at it. If I look at weather I go to Weather Underground a lot. I like the layout, and I understand after working a long time in weather that most weather forecasts are very much the same with very marginal differences. Yeah. And so you might have a personality you like to watch or somebody who is right. But yeah, weather meteorologists are fantastic. Don't get enough credit for correctly predicting temperatures every single day, almost without fail.
Yeah.
They get a hard time when they miss a rainstorm, or you get rained on when they say it's going to rain later.
Yeah.
Weather Underground. How about you? Do you have a favorite?
So I just look at the Apple weather.
Okay.
Look at Weatherbug.
Yeah. Weatherbug. I like the hour by hour thing. I think features.
I'm obsessed that's what I like. With the weather.
Really?
So is Crick.
My boyfriend's obsessed.
It's the first thing I look at when I wake up. I'm like, I need to decide what I'm going to wear.
Oh, that's so funny because, I don't care about the weather a darn. I really don't. I keep an umbrella in my car. If I need it, I pull it out.
Same.
Yeah, I really don't care.
I have too much ADHD, girl. I lost about a billion umbrellas in my lifetime.
Well, you lose them, but you have to buy them at Lowe's when they're $5. They sell them for $5 when it's not raining.
Seasonal umbrella. Sorry, Matt.
So anyway, the things is like we were just looking at both of our weather apps, and because it's supposedly going to snow tonight, and mine said 1 inch, while yours said
1 to 3.
1 to 3, which
said
is a huge.
3.
Mine said 2.
Maybe 0.3 for overnight.
Yeah, it just varies so much,
And that really is the art of the weathercaster when it gets down to things like local snow totals. And you can think about, past weather patterns or patterns of moisture that are particular to the area, that sort of thing. But in the end, a prediction doesn't make a hoot a bit of difference. It's going to be 3 or it's going to be 6. Yeah. And Ryko already closed school.
So did Hannah.
Get the shovels ready. You know?
Yeah, I think the important thing is just if it's going to snow or not.
And is there going to be a significant accumulation?
Yeah.
Also coming from New York, and I'm sure you feel the same way. Snow. I drive in snow. I have an all-wheel drive. I drive a Sub.
No.
So I'm not really worried about it. But
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Oh my God. So the bread and milk situation here is
very
intense.
Gosh.
And the toilet paper.
And who eats that? Because it's there all the time when it's not snowing. So what the hell?
Can you make a bread pudding?
I'm going to the liquor store and I'm getting some popcorn and maybe a pizza.
The kids need peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And
that's
toast.
All they must eat.
And
when
toast,
it's snowing.
Exactly. That's why.
I never understood that.
Me neither, but circle the wagons. Richmond's is a really weird town in a lot of ways. I wouldn't say weird. Quirky and cool.
Yes. Me too.
It's a really nice place to live. People always ask me, well, you were doing the news and you're so successful. Why didn't you go national? And I don't think I'm good enough to be on a national show, but I wouldn't leave because I really enjoyed living here. I could not think of anywhere else that I'd want to ply my trade and be as happy. I love this town.
Me too. That's the whole point of the podcast. We love it here.
It is. Yeah. And it's changed quite a bit in the 30 so years I've been here. And I miss some of the grit that it used to. It used to be a little grittier, y'all. But it's still easy to get around and people are nice and it's very centrally located and beautiful climate. And you have a river that runs through it. A clean river where you can paddleboard.
Questionable cleanness.
In some areas, well, compared to years ago, it's way.
It only depends on if it's rained or not, because that's when E. coli comes out.
And then the pipe just runs right down.
You can get E. coli from anywhere.
Beautiful part. I was going to ask about theater. Are there similarities between the theater and anchoring the news?
Only in as much as it's a presentation. And I think that some people have a knack for it and some people not have knack. But you can't, someone who's a good journalist doesn't have to be a great presenter. You can be a presenter and not be a great journalist. So it's kind of six of one and a half dozen of the other. There's no denying that you're on television. There are some really cool or interesting stylistic things you have to think about, because it's not like you're on stage. On stage, you are emoting and presenting and you're bigger so people in the back can hear me. Ethel Merman, that sort of thing. Television is very small, very close, extremely minute. Not minute bowl, but minute. But you're in a little box. So every time you move your eyebrow, you can see it. You can see people on TV when when someone says something off color, like in a sports broadcast, and someone cuts their eyes, they can't help it. You can see people at a news conference when someone's saying something crazy, people in the back are like shuffling their feet and, visibly nervous. Right. So it's hard to hide what's happening on television.
You got to stay in character.
Here's another thing. Yes, you can do it as a character, but it's far more compelling and far easier and it's much more fun if you can find the courage to be yourself. Yeah. And everything, and especially on TV, because you can fake it. I faked it until I made it. And then when I wasn't afraid of anything going wrong, because everything had gone wrong once, I was much better because I was relaxed and it was okay. And I didn't mind. The lights could go out or anything could happen. We did hurricane coverage one time in a garage because our generator broke.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, you just learn to get along and be okay with yourself.
That's good
advice. I was going to say, if things go wrong, then you're prepared for it the next time.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. But sometimes there's no way to prepare for what's going to go wrong until it hits you. And then you're like,
Also, those times make you the most relatable, though.
Yes.
People are like, oh my God, that same kind of thing happened to me. Like,
the honesty and your sincerity it's hard to fake sincerity. Some people can do it, but it's really hard to fake sincerity on TV.
And that's how you gain trust.
And it also comes from being prepared and knowing that when you walk out there, hey, I'm clean today and I feel good about this and let's do it. And no matter what happens, the sun will come up tomorrow and then we'll get a chance to
do
it again if we haven't been fired.
You know, I was going to say, like, that happens on our podcast. Like, one time we had an Amazon guy ring the doorbell.
When we had Guar.
Yeah, when we had Guar on the shore.
And we're like, oh, my God, Guar? Like, yes. Why are you interrupting?
We had the power go out one time, and we were just sitting around like, oh, I guess it might come on.
Yeah, and we did a seance.
But that's the beauty, right? That's where the gold is sometimes, where stuff happens that's unexpected.
That's right.
I think that's really cool.
That's good advice.
My old radio partner and I, KDP, tried to do a podcast together, but it was difficult because I wanted to kind of be like out there, and she had a real very important, fine corporate job that she deservedly should not have messed up. But we had that kind of thing where I don't want to say this, and she couldn't really be herself or say. She couldn't speak freely, and that impaired sort of the vibe, you know?
Yes. I feel like me and her had that at the beginning, but I'm loosening up a bit.
Oh, I think we've had the vibe from the beginning.
Oh. You guys sound good together.
Yeah.
Well, we have really good
charisma.
I'm
like, girl, you don't know what you're talking
about. But I was scared at the beginning because my parents listen to this.
And oh, okay, good. Yeah. That's really
I'm
nice.
Old enough where I'm like, my parents don't give a shit what I did. So, and I don't give a shit what I did. So whatever.
Yeah, and they listen to all of them.
Both of those positions are equally, you know, yeah. Aren't parents something else?
I know.
They are. You really are, man.
But I want to do like a total 180 because I'm going to get into your real estate career. Yeah.
Yes.
You said that journalism prepared you for commercial real estate.
Okay.
In what ways would you say that anchoring and reporting?
Just knowledge of the area in sort of a granular way. A lot of times I knew, one of the best things about being on the news or in media is access. So you get to meet people that you wouldn't get to meet, see things you wouldn't get to see, go places that you wouldn't get to go. So in that way, my real estate career has been very, very modest. We're a small firm that largely does commercial. We may change focus in 26. There's that team.
Do you know Carter Snipes?
We may go residential.
Oh, shit. Do you know Carter Snipes?
Well, listen, I did my research on you guys. I know Carter's been through here.
Do you know Matt Giroux? Because he's all over here in this area.
No.
He's a real estate agent. Like, literally, he owns Churchill.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, I've never lived up here.
He's got the market cornered around here.
Well, you know, people, right, over time, you create a reputation for yourself. And right, you specialize in an area, and there's so many things to know about housing and housing stock and zoning and who's got what and where. Yeah. It's a tough game. One thing I can say that we've done recently, which I'm very proud of, is in conjunction with another small firm, we recently completed a study for Hanover County on the feasibility of improved hospitality development. Because Richmond is a huge convention center, but the local hotels can't really handle the bigger events there because there just aren't enough rooms in town. Yeah. So if there were to be a hotel complex or a conference hotel complex here in the area, that may be down the road.
I think that'd be great. Considering adding a hotel in that area next to the convention center.
Yeah, I could. It makes sense because we have a bigger facility than we can often accommodate guests for, and there need to be places that can do that. You know, so you have the wine and booze bourbon festival. Is that a thing? So that
wine and booze.
If you have a huge thing, it's one thing, but you might want to do a meeting for 250 or 300 people. Yeah. Now the convention center is, okay, we'll close it off one side, but it's not, you know, there's room for improvement. But that work has been incredibly interesting, and I'm proud of the stuff we've done with that.
So. I was going to say, what are some other projects you've done recently?
We did a historic renovation in Martinsville of an old shoe store that was built a long time ago.
Oh, that's cool.
That was kind of cool. Yeah.
Just a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Like I said, you get, you know, to do, I've had a really lovely life, got to do a lot of cool things, go a lot of cool places, see a lot of cool people, present company included.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Carter was telling us that the Hoff used to be like a camera place.
Yeah. Richmond Camera. Absolutely. With the cool kind of Rococo outside.
And yeah.
What a unique building. Yeah, they don't do them like that anymore.
I know. Natalie's taken us through several times.
They cleaned carpets there.
They did that as well.
They did, yeah.
Carpets and cameras.
They've done it all.
Amazing.
Carpets, cameras.
You're
married. Bar mitzvahs.
Right,
I don't know.
Right. And the 7-Eleven's been there since 1943.
I want to know about your crazy stories.
Okay.
Has anything like...
Tell us something crazy if you
like
want
a crazy
to.
Interview, like a crazy celebrity had, or something. Like,
have you ever been like doing a newscast and there's a flasher or
or like a really crazy party?
Well, here's the thing: because I was an anchor, I blessedly wasn't on the street a lot. So I'm in the studio, man. People running around crazy all the time. There's a lot. Oh, I'll tell you a story. There's two stories. One is let's stick to one. One is
you can tell us the other after we're done.
Okay. So there was a gentleman who was the victim who was mortally wounded in a shooting. Sad story. You know, the circumstances don't really matter. He was an older guy, maybe in his 40s and 50s. So the TV news, of course, descends on the family afterward to get reaction and that sort of thing. And we often ask for pictures that we can use, stills that we can use in our story because the deceased is no longer available for video.
Oh, no.
One time, the woman said she only had one picture of her late partner, and she gave it to us.
Oh, God.
And he was reclined in flagrante delicto.
Oh!
After obviously a vigorous session of lovemaking.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, we cut out the head. We just showed his face. So you have to, you know, you got to crop, you crop the rest of it out. But yeah, my man was in full bloom right there.
Oh,
but that was the poor woman was like, here, I love this picture of him. And she gave us a picture of him naked.
Oh my
that's
God.
Hilarious.
That's hilarious.
It was. We got a big kick out of it.
When you showed it on
no,
TV?
No, he showed his face. Liz.
Yeah, there's no blurred out.
No, we didn't know. There was no box. No.
That would have been hilarious. Like nowadays, y'all would have done that, though.
Listen, I'm sorry the guy's no longer with us. Credit to
he
whatever.
He had a good life. He was blessed.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to say.
Was she a happy woman?
Not when he was gone. Well, I don't know.
That's
one of the craziest things that's happened.
That's actually hilarious.
You know what? Also, like, you know, we had a big we had plans for hurricane coverage, and the hurricane comes through and blows out our generator. And so we're trying to do TV live and keep people informed, but literally the bay doors are open, and it's me and Schaffner in my late partner, Lisa Schaffner, in like director's chairs, and John Bernier's running around doing his thing. It was guerrilla television, so that was also kind of wild.
Yeah,
but that one,
nice.
But the crazy stuff. Sometimes people get obsessed with the people they see on TV. For a lot of people, unfortunately, a regular TV personality is the most regular or consistent thing in their lives. So it's, I got to watch. And I see him every day.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You're watching. People always say, you know, what do I know you from? And I joke, I've been in your house. Maybe in your bedroom at 11, right? Because it's true. You take for granted that how you're in people's lives. So,
yeah.
It's important to. Yeah, sometimes
so you've had stalkers. Wow.
Yeah, okay. But we don't give them any. Don't give them.
We don't talk about Bruno.
If they were Brazilian, I might have took them on.
Is Juan Conde, is that your real name?
I'll never tell. Yes, it is. It's funny you mentioned that though, because the first time I was going to be on the first time I got a radio show, they said, "What are you going to name? What are you going to call yourself?" And I was like, "What? I'd better use my real name because if I have a fake name, I'll forget it and be like, I'm Mike Day. That's me.
And you gotta be yourself.
And it also helped that way. Plus, Juan Conde has kind of a nice ring to it.
It's
a good name.
It was made for TV.
People always call me by both
rolls
names.
Off the
it's
tongue.
Like some people, Juan, you know Juan Conde.
Yeah.
Juan Conde. It's weird.
It's one word.
It's like one, or John Candy. It's a good sounding name.
Yeah. We did say at the end of the Halloween episode, I said, we were teasing the next episode, and I go, I Juan Candy.
Exactly. Big hit by Bow Wow Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. And Aaron Carter, rest in peace.
How about advice for people trying to get into journalism or media in general? Like trying
More
to break
us.
In, what would you... I'd tell them like,
wow. I just reiterate the stuff that I said before, which is, you know, be really, really aware that it matters. If you're going to put yourself in that position and say you're a journalist or to try to convey some sense of proportion or tell stories, be really aware of your own bias and try to put that in, take that into account when you write things, write honestly, write cleanly. It's much easier, I think, to learn journalism after you're proficient in English and writing and communication and history and liberal arts. So you know something about, you know, the system of government that you're operating in and things like that. Like civic knowledge is incredibly important.
Right.
So, I just really take the craft seriously. That's what I would say.
And, be a student of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And be inquisitive and open-minded. And if you can help it, non-judgmental. That helps too.
Yeah.
Most people just really want to be listened to. A great tactic in interviewing someone is to say something and then shut up.
Yeah.
Silence. People will fill silence for you if you let them.
Yeah.
And most people are really interested in talking about themselves. Yeah. Give people a chance to tell their stories.
My dad always said, be a sponge.
Mm, yeah, it's really true.
I have one last question for me. I don't know about Liz, but just how can our listeners follow you and support you and see what you're up to?
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you for asking. I'm gonna start a website soon. So, and I'll have stuff on Facebook. That's kind of gonna be my outlet. So if you follow me on Facebook, please do, and you'll find me there and information about what's going on. I also do fundraising appeals for PBS National.
Oh, yes.
So sometimes I show up. I don't work for VPN here in town, but I show up on PBS sometimes.
So just Juan Condi on Facebook?
Juan Condi, that's it.
Are you on Instagram at all?
Juan Condi, Juan underscore Condi underscore RVA on Instagram.
Okay.
But I'm not big on the gram. I'm a lurker. Cool. I'm not big on posting because, I think it's really important, for me, if I'm going to say something, I want to have something to say and not just kind of be flip about it. So
are you there for the memes at least or the...
Sometimes, man. Sometimes. Yeah. Well, and also cultural currency. You just, you know, some things like you just need to, like K-pop stuff. I wouldn't know about unless I was online.
We might send you some reels.
Please.
Oh, yes. Okay. We'll send you some memes. We'll link you up in our show notes for everyone listening.
Thank you.
And I just have a fun, lighthearted question as my ending.
Okay.
You spend your downtime reading, writing... Riding motorcycles?
Yeah. I love the motorcycles.
What book is on your nightstand right now? And also, what bike are you currently obsessed with?
Oh my gosh! Do you ride?
I've ridden. I ride on the back, yes.
Being a pillion or a passenger is perfectly fine. Yes.
Are you into cruisers or the crotch rockets?
I've crashed a couple of sport bikes. But I'm into like more upright. So right now I have a Versus 650 with the panniers. I rode it to Florida this past summer.
Ooh,
to see my dad.
Wow. Awesome. Wow.
Yeah, it was great. And I have a Triumph Speed 400, which is a single cylinder kind of little like around towny bike. And I also have my dad's old cruiser. So a 2005 Vulcan 800. I love motorcycling. I'm forgetting everything else you asked.
And your book.
And my book. Oh,
what book are you reading?
Best book I've read in many, many years. I'm not a big fiction reader, but my best friend gave me Project Hail Mary. Okay. And Project Hail Mary is the book behind the new Ryan Gosling movie, which is coming out in 26. It's about a scientist who's roped into a space mission to save the world. And it is an incredibly well-written book. The same guy wrote The Martian.
Cue the anxiety attack.
A lot of science and a lot of numbers, but you can skip over those. The story's still good. Yeah.
It reminds me of Pluribus. It's the new, whoever made Breaking Bad, what was his name? Vince Gilligan?
Yeah.
He just made a new show, sort of.
I haven't seen Pluribus yet. I have to get into it.
Thank you, Juan, so much. We're going to link everything, and please jump in on the rest of the show.
Please stay on, because we got a whole bonus load of stuff we want your opinion on. Okay, Big Daddy, it's time for you to drop it on us.
So, like I mentioned, I'm going to be talking about some interesting thing about Christmas trees. So, and why am I talking about that? We are, of course, in the market for a very large...
We need one.
Beast
of a tree. So... Anyway, there's a new place on Marshall Street we want to check out.
Yeah, we're going to get a tree there this weekend.
Yeah. So the Christmas tree tradition, it originated
I just remembered Craig Looney. Tell him I said hi. No, I'm like, duh. Oh, dude.
Yeah, you know my boyfriend.
That's hilarious.
Gotcha.
Stream of consciousness.
Yes, very much. But I wanted to say it in the cast so people would know that.
I love it.
Anyway.
So anyway, they originated in Germany during the 16th century, which makes sense. I mean, you have the German Christmas markets. And so early Christmas trees in Germany were often decorated with apples, which symbolize the paradise tree in medieval plays about Adam and Eve.
Ooh.
Which is kind of interesting. And it takes about 7 to 10 years for a Christmas tree to grow to a typical height of 6 to 7 feet.
Damn. Yeah. They've been growing those for a long time.
Before electric lights were invented, trees were decorated and illuminated by using small wax candles, which started which I've seen pictures of, and why did they discontinue that? Because
this podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell. Fast. To our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
It's a fire hazard. You've got like a dry ass tree. You've got some...
We're done.
You've got heat.
There was no electricity, Olivia. There was no other choice.
And so it's going to go up in smoke, you know? And so today, nearly 98% of all real Christmas trees sold in the U.S. are grown on farms, not cut in the wild. And this is kind of an interesting fact about myself. My grandmother used to own a Christmas tree farm in North Carolina.
Big Daddy Christmas.
Which is kind of cool. And so while growing, 1 acre of Christmas trees provide enough daily oxygen for approximately 18 people.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
You had a lot of oxygen as a child. I can tell.
He was over oxygenated.
Yeah, And so, Liz, you can relate to this one because we have one of these.
Ooh.
So there is a popular tradition where a pickle ornament is hidden in the tree, and the first child to find it on Christmas morning receives a special gift or extra luck. So I don't know what that special gift
Someone's
would
getting
be
lucky
for
this
finding
Christmas.
Finding the pickle.
I'll let you know when I find it.
So... last but not least, the world record. So the tallest cut Christmas tree ever displayed was 221 feet. It was a Douglas fir in Seattle, Washington in 1950.
Oh, my God.
And so for
wait, how tall?
221 feet.
Oh, my. That's my lanta.
And so for scale, the typical tree at Rockefeller Center is 75 feet tall.
Oh, my God.
And at the U.S. Capitol, that tree is 60 to 80 feet tall.
That's
picture
a big-ass tree.
Yeah. So what are your guys' like favorite Christmas tree traditions, or do you have any special ornaments?
My dad and I, when I was a kid, because my mom and dad got divorced when I was very young, so I spent half my Christmases with my dad, half with my mom. My dad insisted on getting a real tree. And I remember we had a wooden floor and all of our bulbs were like very fragile that we put on the tree. And I just remember hearing them smash like all every Christmas. There was just a memory of cleaning like, up broken ornaments.
It's like on Home Alone.
And getting stabbed in the foot.
That's right. Yeah. The glass. Yeah.
Where the guy steps through the window and
the one wet of the bandits. Wet bandits.
A lot of blood was shed on Christmas.
Juan, how about you?
For years, my baby sister... would put a little granny mouse on top of the tree instead of a star.
Oh, so okay.
It had a little bonnet on and little whiskers. She's cute. So we'd stick her on top of the tree. So that
granny
was the
mouse.
Yeah, little granny mouse. And I don't know how it started, but that's
sweet.
Yeah, it really was.
I have a good one, actually. This will be quick. I'll try. So growing up, my grandparents lived next door to, and this is when they were younger, a family that they were good friends with, but the both of them were alcoholics, not my grandparents, the people next door. So one Christmas, my grandma notices the wife has like thrown away all of her Christmas tree ornaments, everything. And it's like brand new stuff. So my grandma's like, I'll do a little dumpster diving. So she found this beautiful velvet little Rudolph figurine. And from the time I was born, I became obsessed with it. So every year since then, it's always been my job when I get to my mom's house or my grandma's house to find Rudolph and like find the spot where Rudolph sits in the tree. So now that my grandma's passed away and we're hosting Christmas here, he actually sits upstairs on the bookshelf next to a picture of my grandparents.
I never knew that.
That's and so we're hosting for the first time this year, so I'm going to bring it down and put it in the tree.
I'm in charge of the fabulous prizes this year.
That's right. So we also do a fabulous prize thing.
The love letters between our pets.
Juan, you might want to come here on Christmas Eve. It's that amazing.
That's a really beautiful story.
Aww.
I love that.
Minus the alcoholic going away.
It's always alcohol at the beginning of every story.
Those drunks didn't know Rudolph's worth.
I know. Big Daddy, how about you?
So I always enjoy drinking around the tree while decorating.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
One time,
we do that.
Liz, I think you fell asleep after we went to. It must have been Liberty Public House or something.
And
Olivia and I decorated the tree.
Yes, I remember it well.
I was the sub wife.
It's fine. You'll do in a pinch. Well, thank you, Big Daddy.
You're welcome.
All right, moving on. We have some events. Olivia, you got some events?
Okay, you guys. There are so many new Christmas pop-ups this year. There's a kajillion. I'm going to read you three very surprising ones. The first one is Mosaic. It's kind of like we're near RVA or what is it? Richmond. I cannot think right now. But U of R. That's where it is. It's around that area. They have transformed into Candy Cane Lane, a winter wonderland with boozy hot chocolates, brand new cocktails, and over-the-top decor with twinkling lights, holiday vibes, and festive music. And I think this is their first time they've ever done this. So,
yeah. It is.
They're also doing Mosaic After Hours. So they're open past 9, which is unusual, with special light night holiday cocktails. And they're also doing a Santa's brunch every Saturday and Sunday right now through Christmas. So you can bring the whole crew, holiday cheer, maybe a little magic with the big guy in red because he's going to be there.
Yay.
Bring your kids. Reservations are available. So I would definitely make one because you know how Richmond is. You have to have a reservation.
Yes, it's true.
And then this is the most unexpected one. My Noodle and Bar. has quietly transformed into one of Richmond's most unexpected holiday gems. This family-owned Thai restaurant has gone full festive with cozy holiday decor, twinkly lights, and that warm, low-key vibe that makes you want to settle in with a cocktail and never leave. They also have an outdoor deck, apparently, and it's insane. Ooh. And warm.
Important.
Yes,
yes, that's very important.
We're also in Richmond, you guys. It's not that cold.
Well, I don't know. It's going to be like 20 to 12.
Last winter, it got down to 11. So that was
Matt's pretty- like, I know. I mean,
okay. And then one that Matt and I just heard about, and I guess Liz now too, and Juan, is Terrence Downtown. It has their Tis the Season pop-up. This is their first one as well. They have espresso martini flights. So Liz and I definitely got to go.
Wow. Yeah.
Hot tonight? Chocolate.
No, not tonight.
Well, we good. Hot chocolate, sugar cookies, overwhelming Christmas decorations, and a whole new cocktail menu. Also, Solaire Rooftop, Bar West, and Hotel Green are all doing new pop-ups.
Very nice.
And it's first time ever.
Shout out to Terrence for not burning down recently.
Thank you, Terrence.
Yes, the apartment above.
It was just the apartment above,
thankfully.
But not... Thankfully for
the
occupants.
For Terrence.
And I have two of my fave pop-ups I think everyone should check out. It's well, Cirrus is there all the time, but they do Santa's Workshop. It's from December 2nd to the 31st, extended hours. You also have Yellow Umbrella right there, Slack Tide, the new restaurant. Everything there is amazing. Mm. You could then just have a few drinks, maybe nosh on something, and then trip, trip, chop down the way to Black Lodge, which is Project Hail Mary. And oh my God, we went there last year. Oh, it was so good. They're so frozen.
Shout out Flight Club.
Shout out Alex from Flight Club.
Yes, mm-hmm. Alex from Flight Club. We love you. Hope you're still there because I need you to bring me some drinks. They had an amazing, it was like a frozen eggnog last year. Oh my God, it was so good.
Yeah.
Yes. And then they had that Alpine. Well, that was due to my mother poisoning. But
salmonella.
I digress.
I'm really proud you used real eggs.
Yes.
But it changed the course of her future because
it did. She ended up started your healthy life. Weight.
I lost 60 pounds after that, and I've kept it off 3 years. So thank you, Mom, for poisoning me.
Yeah.
Shout out to Carrie.
Boy. Yes. But anyway, also go to Black Lodge for Hail Mary. Get the frozen eggnog, not the poisoned eggnog from my mom. Mm-hmm. And also get one of their Alpine dogs or that big tower of hot dogs and stuff that they have. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, a tower of hot dogs.
Basically, ballpark food and frozen cocktails. How can you go wrong?
Except right when you get home.
But. Well, you just forget about that and continue on the next day. All right. So moving on, our business of the week. New restaurant, The Brooklyn. It's at 1616 Summit Avenue. Check them out at thebrooklynrva.com. They have hours and reservation info there. I think they're kind of still working out their permit hours.
So the Brooklyn, they're owned by Lost Letter. It's the same owners.
Yes, yes. It's a wine and cocktail bar, a place for dinner, snacks, a quick drink that turns into a late night. It's right near Pinky's, so it's in between Summit and High Point Norfolk.
Okay.
It's near Collie's or Callie's CBD.
Yeah, that place is so good.
I know.
Forgot about that place.
But so they have cocktails that are classic. Honest food made by people who love to cook. The lights are low, the music feels good, and the service is warm. I checked out the menu. If I were going to eat there, I would order the beef carpaccio with porcini and horseradish, perhaps the whole branzino with beurre blanc. And then they had a delicious-looking cocktail called the Brandy Crusta. With cognac, curacao, maraschino, bitters, and lemon.
Curacao and cognac. Interesting.
Mm. And brandy. Don't forget the brandy.
Brandy.
It's a hard hitter.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, you're going to try it, so you can tell me afterwards. And then our show of the week.
Here we go.
So, Candlelight Christmas Carols. It is a string quartet at the Bird. Yes, you heard that right.
That's
the Bird
so cool
Theater with
Bird.
Their amazing seats that
Bird
they have
the
now. That's right. That's going to be on Thursday, December 18th at 8:45. The show is 8 years of age and older. I don't know why. Younger.
No crying babies,
I guess. Yes, that's right. Sorry. I didn't make the rules. But
I'm glad.
Tickets start at $39.50 and go to $55.50. So check it out. The show is an hour, and it's all of your Christmas favorites. I'll tell you what some of the set list is,
because I got to a sneak peek. The Halloween version of this, and it was beautiful.
Oh, that's right.
It was absolutely beautiful.
And I got my dad and Roger tickets to the Vivaldi one, and they loved it. But so tentative program, they'll be playing all your Christmas standards, Carol of the Bells, Deck the Halls, Ding Dong, Merrily on High, Do You Hear What I Hear, etc., etc. So go check it out. Be there, be square. Shout outs, peeps.
For my shout outs, Craig and I have been going to Bryant Park Bar and Grill on Lakeside quite a few times in the past 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it has slowly become my new favorite dive bar. The staff is amazing. They poured my wine glass up to the tip top just because they liked my outfit.
And shout like out to Batman. There's a bartender there whenever he's there. Apparently he wore a Batman costume and now everyone calls him Batman. So when he comes, he bought a light that shines on the ceiling so people know he's there when the Batman light is on.
The bat signal.
I love that.
It's okay. Awesome. Honestly, they're amazing. And they're all decked out too for Christmas. And they also won an award for like the Richmond
Oh
Best.
Yeah, I remember. I saw
they were voted number one dive nice. Bar in Richmond.
I love it.
It's quite an accomplishment.
Yes.
I'm just surprised. They're very awesome. And then also Sushi Masa on Broad Street. It looks like you're in Vegas when you go in there.
I saw your picture.
Yeah, you got to check it out. They don't have, they should have a full bar. They just have beer and wine, but like I feel like it has a really good opportunity to have some cool cocktails in there because of the vibe. But definitely check it out. They have really good sushi.
They probably just need to get their licensing.
Yeah, but they definitely should do it. They should try. But I love it. I love it there.
Big Daddy.
All right. So my shout out is for Cahoots.
Ooh.
Have you heard of it?
I've heard word on the street.
So it's a new bar that recently opened on 2526 Floyd Avenue, which was the former home of Mike's Jazz Cafe in Spoonbread. Mm-hmm. So building. And it used to be the Mexican restaurant too, right?
Mm-hmm. It's been a bunch of things.
Yeah, I'm like, it's been multiple iterations. Mm-hmm.
And so the upstairs will be a cocktail bar, while the downstairs will be a traditional neighborhood pub. And so the food they're serving is a mix of Southern and seafood.
Ooh.
And so when you're in the bar, you can say, we're in Cahoots.
Ha, ha, ha.
That's cute.
Yeah.
But Juan, any... thing you want to shout out?
One thing that I've no, you guys got it covered. I hardly
No. No. He has no life. No,
I really, no, I don't. I stay home so much more than I used to. I used to hang out a lot.
That's kind of nice, actually.
But it's great to hear the hot spots and the cool places to go.
Yeah, you got to come out with us to some of the Christmas.
I will shout out Virginia ABC, Hanover County, and raccoons who love to party.
Yes. That should be, the possum and the raccoon are definitely original animals.
So the raccoon, it consumed a mix of 14 bottles, and it was a mixture of scotch, whiskey, rum, vodka, and eggnog.
Are we going to be taxed for this?
So he had a good time.
Yeah, but I just am impressed that he made it to the bathroom.
I am too, honestly.
Yeah. And there wasn't like a trail of vomit or.
All right. We've got a rapid fire list of pop-ups that we want to yell at y'all.
And then we'll wrap it up.
Yes. You go first.
Okay. The Evergreen at Birdie's. Miracle on Carry at Jasper Bar and Miracle RVA.
Noel at Boku RVA. Now, that's what I call Christmas, I already mentioned, at Black Lodge.
The Tacky Christmas Bar at Midlothian Chef's Kitchen and 1870 Restaurant. And Santa's Cocktail Shop at Sarah's Vodka, which we've already mentioned.
Yeah. Yep. The West Pole at Bar West. This sounds really fun. Everyone check it out. Winterfrüden at Hotel Green. You can putt-putt while you sip on Alpine deliciousness.
Did we already mention the Emerald Lounge? Okay, never mind. Well, Sip and Santa at Emerald Lounge. I'll say it again. Winter Wonderland at Napa Kitchen Wine. I love this one.
Mm-hmm.
And Jingle Up at Solaire Rooftop, which we mentioned.
Fall Line Express Christmas at Fall Line RVA. Tinsel and Tequila at Casa del Barco.
Rum and Reindeer at Island Shrimp at Rocket's Landing. Bring your wallet. That place is expensive.
Also for Casa del Barco, that's expensive.
Yeah, very expensive.
That's all I got. Yeah.
Okay, you guys, we'll link everything up in the show notes.
And there's many, many more, actually. It feels like is the year of everyone realized, damn, we can make double the money if we
decorate
and
shit
and fairy lights and call it Christmas.
It's like the Jasper was really onto something.
Well, that's a nationwide thing. There's certain cities throughout the land that have a miracle on somewhere.
on Blank Street.
Yes.
So. All right. Before
the more you know.
Before we go, we want to thank you, Juan Condi, so much for gracing us.
Thank you
Christmas.
For having me and allowing me to pontificate.
Absolutely. Yes, I can't wait to hear more as Thanks. You slowly breadcrumb us with your upcoming.
Thank you.
We loved hearing your musings.
Thanks, we did. Man.
Yes.
It's nice to be in the presence of Big Daddy.
Wow.
And I'm not talking about that unfortunate guy who got shot with the picture.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That's a good one.
All right. Well, until next time, y'all, have a
holly jolly holiday.
Keep warm out there because apparently it's going to be real cold the next
few
weeks.
Do we have a sneak peek?
We do. Our last show of the year will be with Melanie Eaton, photographer extraordinaire.
Long time coming. God, we've been...
I know. We had a happy hour with her like a year ago to talk about her coming on the show.
I think it was 2 years ago.
Well, it's about time.
I know. So everyone should go check her out on Facebook or Instagram before then because she does an incredible series for women photography, 4 sessions a year that are themed.
The Me Project.
Yes. So check it out.
And follow us too at @olala_RVA.
Be there.
On all the socials.
Yes. That's right. On all the socials. So until next time,
Feliz
Naughty Dog.
And have a wonderful holly jolly holiday.